This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The Supreme Court rejecting the Trump administration's appeal to quickly resume deportations of Venezuelans under the use of the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. The justices issuing the decision based on an emergency appeal from lawyers representing the Venezuelan men who are accused of being gang members. On the heels of his Mideast trip, President Trump says talks over Iran's nuclear program is making progress. ABC's Karen Travers with more.
The president didn't give specifics to explain his optimism or details about what the proposal is that he said today the Iranians have from the United States. His special envoy, Steve Witkoff, has been leading these conversations. There have been four rounds of indirect talks between the United States and Iran in recent weeks. The last one happened on Sunday in Oman. It's not clear yet when the next one would take place, but the president expressing optimism that they're getting close.
Direct talks between Ukraine and Russia falling flat today in Turkey. The Russia delegation calling for Ukrainian land as terms for a ceasefire. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
A Wisconsin Circuit Court judge appeared in federal court yesterday on charges of obstructing federal agents in an immigration case. With more, here's Civic Media's Stuart J. Waddles.
Judge Hannah Dugan wants her federal case dismissed. In a filing yesterday, her attorneys claimed she's immune from prosecution for actions taken as part of her official duties. Dugan is accused of helping an undocumented immigrant evade arrest at the courthouse, but her lawyers say the prosecution is unconstitutional and violates the 10th Amendment. Dugan remains suspended from the bench.
Dugan pleaded not guilty to the charges in court on Thursday. Unemployment rates remain low in Wisconsin. With more, here's Civic Media's Lisa Hale.
The number of unemployed people in Wisconsin increased slightly in April, according to preliminary estimates from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. The Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development announced Wisconsin's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate increased slightly to 3.3% over the last month. That's still 0.9 percentage points below the national unemployment rate of 4.2%.
La Crosse, like many cities of its size in the state, has lower unemployment than the statewide average. The school district of La Crosse is holding several public informational sessions, which they are calling visioning sessions, to get feedback on the future of the district. In the past 2 weeks, district officials have presented materials to the La Crosse Common Council and La Crosse County Board, including a session Wednesday with the county. So far, the district has held over a dozen of the sessions with different groups in La Crosse. The sessions are intended to help guide future decisions and priorities for the school district. If you're renting out your home or property for short-term rentals in Monroe County, you'll now need a license to do so. County officials announced that any so-called tourist rooming houses, including bed and breakfasts, short-term rentals, or other lodging facilities, even if they're only being used during the summer, need a license to operate. Property owners have until June 30th to apply for a license. Any place that operates without the license can be fined $750. You can find out more information on the Monroe County Health Department website.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers host the Twins at AmFam Field. The crew coming off that 9-5 win over the Guardians when Sal Frelick finally hit his second home run of the season and celebrated by spiking his helmet in the dugout. Was that premeditated?
Well, not premeditated. A lot of emotion. Not really a lot of frustration. I don't think that's the right word. I think more just like making sure when good things happen, like guys are fired up and, you know, even when they don't, like guys have good at bats without a result, go give them a pat, stuff like that. So, yeah, just trying to fire some guys up, I guess.
NFL, the Packers introducing their new defensive line coach, DeMarcus Covington, who says he never had talent like Rashawn Gary, Lucas Van Ness, or Kenny Clark in his 8 seasons with the Patriots.
You're talking to a guy who's, I don't think I've ever had a coach the first-round draft pick. So you're talking to a guy who can develop players and guys who already established themselves.
That's the Packers defensive line coach, DeMarcus Covington, with sports on Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy sky with scattered showers tonight and breezy with lows in the upper 40s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, still a little breezy, highs upper 50s to 60. Sun is back for Sunday, highs mid-60s. Rain chances return later Monday and especially into Tuesday. Currently at 75 degrees.
Matt Nair on air.
Corrine Hendrickson, she owns a daycare center.
Between 2010 and 2019, 6,000 childcare programs closed. When COVID hit, they were like, we can't do this again. So they invested in us. And now our state is going to be one of six. They took the federal dollars, but our state does zero. You're looking at 25% closing. I am likely going to be one of them.
This would be good to know if you would like to perhaps call your representative.
Yes. Catch Matt Nair on air at its new time. Weekday mornings, 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
LFG, baby. Let's go.
Do you know who the king of LFG is? Tom Brady. Before every game, he runs to the crowd, screams LFG, fist bumps, and runs back.
He could be saying, let's floss gingerly.
No, he doesn't say the acronym.
Let's floss gingerly. Whatever reason, it gets the team wound up.
Okay. That intimidates the opponents right there.
He gets it done.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. The fabulous farm babe, Pam Yonke, will join us to talk about resources for Wisconsin farmers. Please don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
We as Republicans, as Democrats, as independents, as liberals and conservatives,
get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
If it was bad before today, I cannot believe how much worse it has gotten.
If we don't band together and protest, our democracy will be gone.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
And I'm freaked the frickin' frack out.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth, here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. If I'm sounding a little froggy, I am. Please excuse mes amis, and happy Friday to each and every one of you. Again, my name is Maggie Dawn. I got a great co-host with me for this first hour. His name is Jim Santel. He is a former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin and host of the fine program Amicus, a legal brief that you can find across the Civic Media Talk Radio Network from 9 to 11 on Saturdays. Welcome back, Jim.
Maggie, delighted to be with you once again. You don't sound one bit froggy to me.
Okay, well, we'll keep rolling with that. I have a bit of breaking news for you, Jim, and all of our fine listeners. The Supreme Court, within the last couple of hours, declining to permit the Trump administration to continue to deport people under the Alien Enemies Act. This was an emergency appeal on the Supreme Court's shadow docket. This from CNN Politics. The Supreme Court on Friday blocked President Donald Trump from moving forward with deportations under the 1798 Alien Enemies Act for a specific group of immigrants in northern Texas, siding with the Venezuelans who feared they were poised for imminent removal under the sweeping wartime authority. The decision is a significant loss for Trump, who wants to use the law to speed deportations and avoid the kind of review normally required before removing people from the country. Yeah, that's called due process. CNN continues, but the decision is also temporary. And the underlying legal fight over the president's invocation of the Alien Enemies Act continues simultaneously in multiple federal courts across the country. You won't be surprised to hear, Jim, that Thomas and Alito publicly noted their dissent in the unsigned order. This decision was very strongly worded, I guess, would be a way to characterize this. The court noted that the Trump administration has represented it, that it is, quote, unable to provide for the return of an individual deported in error to a prison in El Salvador, referring to the case of Albrego Kilmar Garcia. The court continued then and said the detainee's interests, therefore, in this case are accordingly particularly weighting. Yeah, I would say
yes,
so.
Yes, yes.
And here was the other, some of the other notable language that I saw. The court called the Trump administration's handling of the removals as not passing muster. Mm. It did not, quote, pass muster. And the justices noted that there was only 24 hours notice provided to these particular potential deportees, which was, quote, devoid of information about how to exercise the due process rights to contest that removal. The court went on and said this: today's ruling effectively extends the temporary freeze. There's also additional language in there. It's pretty gosh darn clear for a Supreme Court emergency docket petition. Jim, your immediate reactions to this breaking news.
Absolutely. And again, I think we've got the Supreme Court again gradually moving to the right position here. We saw them, a couple of weeks ago saying we're not going to address the underlying issue about whether the Alien Enemies Act applies, but you have to establish due process for anybody. And that was a big step, right? Even though they didn't address the underlying predicate issue. And so now we're more than inching, but we're getting to that right spot where we're not only ensuring that due process is accomplished here, but in the meantime, can't do anything without that. It is also significant because, as you just noted, Maggie, we've got, again, near unanimity, not quite unanimity. It comes in the wake of was Judge Stephanie Haynes of just last week, Western Pennsylvania. She's a district court judge. She's the first one who goes in the opposite direction. And she says that the Alien Enemies Act can be used. The president can use it. She's out there and she's an outlier. She's not the one who's in the mainstream here. And so it's also beginning to capsulize, if you will, this overall sort of jurisprudence in this area. Supreme Court sounds to me as if it's moving a whole lot more directly to saying, Donald, you need to do these fundamental things, and we're going to give you some leeway, but we're not going to let you just run roughshod over rights. And, oh, by the way, the fact that they once again identify the Maryland man who has been sitting in El Salvador mistakenly for all these weeks and months, that is an outrage, of course, for all of us in America. That should be a matter of shame for the Department of Justice, Homeland Security. The fact that they identify that also speaks volumes to me.
A bunch of things there, Jim. I just wanted to point out for everyone, to date, again, every single judge that has considered whether or not the Trump administration can invoke the Alien Enemies Act has ruled that it cannot. The Alien Enemies Act applies when there is an invasion or you're at war. They found that neither applies. The judge in the one case where the judge concluded that the Trump administration may invoke the Alien Enemies Act to deport these particular Venezuelans predicated that ruling on her crediting the administration's assertion that the immigrants were being, the immigrants, A, were part of this Tren de Agua gang, and that the gang itself and the immigrants coming to the United States illegally were being controlled in part or whole by the Venezuelan government. That's how she got to the Alien Enemies Act invocation. What's interesting there is she does not interrogate that factual representation by the government. What we have seen in the reporting over the last 2 weeks, Jim, is that intelligence agencies have issued a report directly contradicting that, saying they have no evidence, no reason to believe that immigrants from Venezuela are either a priori or without other specific evidence presumed to have any affiliation with Tren de Agua, and or that that gang or these immigrants are being directed, controlled, or otherwise cooperating in cahoots, in collaboration, pick your synonym here, with the Venezuelan government. In other words, the judge carefully crafted that ruling, and the factual basis that that entire ruling hinges upon is actual nonsense.
Right.
So I'll put it this way. There is unanimity amongst all federal courts, including the one that seemed to rule in the opposite, that actually he can't do this at all because the factual predicate in that case has been undermined by Trump's own intelligence agencies.
And that's
which huge, I think right? is an important point here.
Absolutely. And that it is huge, Maggie, as both of us, your listeners know this as well. There has always been, until recently, and again, I think Judge Haynes' order reflects this, not a complete deference factually, but government comes forward. You were in government. I was in government. There was a kind of a presumption that if you stood forward and said, you know what, I'm going to make a proffer to you, Judge, that this is what the world is all about. These are the facts out there. There wasn't just a complete buy-in from the judges, but there was a presumption that we're representing accurately what's going on. And so she does, in fact, parse her language to say, okay, if you, in fact, are representing to me that this is the case, I'll rely on that. But she doesn't, as you just accurately and precisely said, she doesn't buy into the underlying factual presentation, except insofar as the attorneys are saying this to her. And right. Now we've got the broader information, of course, that it's not true. It's not true. And that's what the other judges are also just tearing their hair out about, right? Whether it's Boasberg in Washington, D.C. or Zinnix in Maryland, they're saying, tell me the truth. Tell me what's going on here. And we've got a Department of Justice, assistant U.S. attorneys, people from Maine Justice appearing in front of them, not telling them the truth, not responding to them. And that is the breakdown of the system.
So, Jim, this gets me to this next juiciest question. Folks, if you're just joining us, that's Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to join Jim and I in this great discussion this fine Friday afternoon, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. One of the core problems here, Jim, in my opinion, is that lawyers are repeatedly lying to the court.
Yes, yes. Right.
And I am really curious. I mean, during COVID, I forgot to send my CLE paperwork in and my license got administratively suspended for 2 weeks and I had to hire a lawyer. I mean, it was a huge kerfuffle. I probably spent northwards of like $8,000 because I was working for the county at that time. I wanted to be sure that the county executive understood that I was taking this seriously, that I realized I had made a mistake and not complete. I mean, bad stuff. But they yanked my license for 2 weeks because I didn't send in the right paperwork on time during a once-in-a-generation global pandemic.
Right. An administrative matter, right? Exactly.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. What in the hell? Like, where are these state bars?
Right.
Are people not filing ethics complaints? And if so, why not? Because these are, especially in the case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia and the representations made about the when the airplanes were
right,
I mean, this
right.
is lawyers lying to federal court judges.
It is. It is. And again, that is not only we talk about being an officer of the court. That's number one, right? We take an oath to the state constitution, the federal constitution. We also stand up. We are also admitted to the bars. And that means that when a judge asks you a question, you, me, any lawyer, doesn't have to be in government, outside of government, the answer has got to be, Your Honor, these are the facts. And this is how I know. If I don't know, The response is, I won't say
right.
so. I won't make things up. And then you quickly, as you and I have always done, said, Your Honor, I will get that information to you as quickly as I can.
Let me run out of court and go get it and file immediately.
Right.
And here's the thing, like, even if government agents or high level people in the Trump administration are willing to lie about it, lawyers, as officers of the court, have certain diligence responsibilities before they can permit their client to say in a sworn document or in court after swearing an oath that these things are true. It's why, let's be clear here, a lot of criminal defense lawyers don't put their clients
yes.
on the stand because
right.
you cannot, as a lawyer, suborn perjury, whether in live testimony in court or in a sworn document. So all of this is strains the outer limits of what we should be able to expect, especially from lawyers working in government. There's an old Supreme Court case where I forget who's writing here. It may even be Learned Hand or someone of similar repute, where the justice says the government lawyer's job is not to win necessarily, but to seek justice in the courts.
Right.
And justice, of course, is predicated upon a commitment to both tell and seek the truth.
Exactly.
Folks, we got Jim Santel with me. I'm Maggie Dawn. It's a Friday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. Gotta share a little bit of fact. House of Representatives says no to the big, beautiful bill. Mm-hmm. We'll discuss that and the Supreme Court's incredible oral arguments yesterday that could upset constitutional rights in this country as we know them. This fine discussion continues on the other side. Join us, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Offer not valid in all states or where prohibited by law. Loans are subject to lender approval. See website for details.
Honey, the credit card bill came, and we're maxed out.
Maxed out cards, rent is due. We just need some extra cash to help us get by.
Maybe we should go to 27cash.com.
With our bad credit?
27cash.com is one of the largest personal loan networks. They can help people with any type of credit get up to $5,000, and cash can hit our bank account as soon as tomorrow.
When you need extra cash, go to 27cash.com. That's 27cash.com. 27cash.com.
Streaming TV is where it's at. It's not about cutting the cord anymore. It's all about your customized TV options. With the best and cheapest high-speed internet and your own TV subscriptions, we've got your dream TV lineup. Between wired and satellite internet and TV, save money and get more internet speed and better TV today by calling the Whole Home Connect.
800-217-9129. 800-217-9129. 800-217-9129.
Keeping you connected to your local community with good news and great conversation. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's a hit. Milwaukee Brewers baseball cards are being shared in several communities across the state. The partnership is with police officers in Green Bay, La Crosse, Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Madison, and meant to be an icebreaker between the cops and kids. Here's Brewers President of Business Operations, Rick Schlesinger.
Eventually want to do it to more than just the major cities. So we're trying to get around the state as best we can and to sort of engage with our friends around the state. We're a statewide team. We're not just a Milwaukee team.
So see an officer, ask for your own comic book style baseball cards featuring all your favorite Brewers players. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
Being blind doesn't look how others may think.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support.
Learn more at fightingblindness.org, a public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Friday, everybody. Hope you are doing just fine this afternoon. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, here at Civic Media, all summer long, it's going to be Free Ticket Friday, where we will be giving away a 4-pack of Brewers tickets for our lovely club level seats. I have sat there before. They're gorgeous tickets. Can see the whole ballpark beautifully. To enter to win, you're going to need to download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps from. It is free. And then you're going to want to keep listening. This hour and next hour, I will be dropping the word to win. You're going to want to text that word in via the app. If you text it in on your phone the old-fashioned way, that doesn't count for getting yourself entered to win. When you text in via the app, you will get an acknowledgement text, and our winners will be notified on Monday. So keep it locked throughout the Maggie Dawn Show and all day long here on Civic Media for the Free Ticket Friday word to win. Here's some of the breaking news. Obviously, the GOP tax bill and budget reconciliation got voted down. Shockingly, five Republicans, I'm going to call them hardcore right Republicans, voted against the bill, including Josh Brechin, I don't know how to say the guy's last name, a Republican from Oklahoma, Chip Roy, Texas, Ralph Norman of South Carolina, Andrew Klein of Georgia, and Lloyd Smucker, no, not that Smucker, though he is from Pennsylvania, all voting against it because there's not enough cuts. Now, here's what, everybody, that's pretty rich. Considering the fact, and this is like typical New York Times these days, one of their headlines today reading, the GOP tax bill may hurt the lowest earners and help the richest. Let me help you out, New York Times editorial board. It is guaranteed to do just that. And ladies and gentlemen, if you were listening all week to this fine program, what you know is that I broke all of this down for you on Wednesday in detail. I broke it down before the Times or the Washington Post or the LA Times or the Chicago Trib went through all of this detail. They're finally getting there today. I did it on a Wednesday. You always get the best economic analysis here first. And in fact, some of what that New York Times article covers is from the Penn-Wharton budget model. What did I talk about on Wednesday? The Penn-Wharton budget model.
And Maggie, you know, Jim, you've also got a much better headline, right? You go right to the point and explain this is not a matter for vacillating and this language is sort of indicates, well, this might have this input. No, you're very clear and the facts support that, right? And the New York Times has had this problem all along and in
for a long time. And it's getting worse, frankly. They quote the same statistics that I was quoting on Wednesday. Folks that make less than $51,000 a year will see their after-tax income fall.
There you go.
Fall because so many of the deductions and other things that actually benefit the middle class are on the chopping block. In addition, folks reporting less than $17,000 in income will see an even higher reduction in their after-tax income. Wow. But hey, if you're making more than 4.3 mil, Jim, I know that's me and you. Yeah,
yes,
but no.
Yes.
If you make more than $4.3 million, you're going to see your after-tax income grow by nearly $400,000 because you really need that if you're pocketing 4.3 mil. I just, none of this is defensible at any level. And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, may I also remind everybody that Donald Trump has passed a whopping five pieces of legislation since getting sworn in, the lowest number of bills enacted in any president's first clip of time in over 70 years. He's literally not getting it done for the American people, Jim.
And in fairness, Maggie, we do know that he's trying to legislate by executive orders. We've got lots of those going
by
on.
By fiat, yes.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so we no longer care about the legislature. And, of course, when he does, what does he say about this wonderful exposition that you've been doing? He says Republicans must unite behind the one big, beautiful bill. We don't need grandstanders. Republican Party, stop talking and get it done. Well, if that's your version of legislative pursuits, Mr. President, you're going to be experiencing a lot of this down the road. It is stunning also, as you said at the top of today's discussion of this, that the reason why the Republicans are falling apart now is because it didn't go far enough, right?
Right. The things that they're worried about is that there aren't enough cuts.
Yes.
There isn't enough harm to the middle class to benefit the wealthiest among us, to give them more tax welfare that they don't need in the first place. It's so ridiculous. It is reverse Robin Hood, rob from the poor to give to the rich. Trump also later today, after that tweet on Truth Social or whatever we call them, said, this bill is great. The golden age of America will soon be upon us. To be clear, what Donald Trump is talking about is that he will make life suck more for all middle-class Americans and all working poor, while making life all the more enriched, easy, and lazy for the very ultra-wealthy and mega-corporations and the very, very, very few of us that own stock in mega-corporations. the golden age of America will soon be upon it. Why doesn't he just call it out? It's the Gilded Age, Jim. Mm-hmm. Back when it's the only point in time in our country's history where we've seen wealth inequality that's anywhere in the ballpark, though our wealth and income inequality is worse now than it was back then. Absolutely disgusting.
And that's the mission in all of these areas. This is the latest illustration of it. Let us hope, with your advocacy and others out there, people have got to remember this event right here, right now, right? Yeah. This is the attempt. Remember this in November of 2026 when you're figuring out who your representative is going to be in that very Congress.
Absolutely. Join this fine conversation. We got a couple of callers on the line. We got a fine guest co-host in the chair with me. His name's Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. My name's Maggie Dawn, your host. Through all 2 hours this afternoon, we're going to take your calls and texts. We're going to talk about that Supreme Court argument that happened yesterday. I don't know, Jim, maybe a toss-up, that one. Mm-hmm. Keep it locked, everybody. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and join us, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. The entire state endured a severe weather outbreak, with over 30 tornado warnings issued last night. Now, the National Weather Service offices are out surveying the damage. NWS Twin Cities is looking at St. Croix County, where a tornado was reported seen on the ground, with pictures and videos of it near the town of Roberts, and it looked to be headed towards New Richmond. The skies were green, and this is just 45 minutes outside of Minneapolis. Meanwhile, near Eau Claire in Altoona, softball-sized hail came crashing through windows, busting out windshields on cars, and doing some damage. NWS in La Crosse is in Clark County today, looking at 3 to 4 different spots where twisters may have struck, like Loyal to Colby, which is just about 35 minutes west of Wausau. And the NWS Green Bay is in Marathon County in the Rib Falls area, surveying damage and possible touchdowns in Cronin weather, too. Ping pong ball size hail was reported near there, as well as Stevens Point, where strong rotation was also seen near Plover. The NWS Milwaukee is in Juneau and Mayville in Columbia County, which is about an hour away from downtown Milwaukee. There, roofs are reported ripped off of homes, damage to buildings, power lines down, and trees. Before Thursday, the state had seen 7 tornadoes so far this year on April 28th. 3 of them were rated EF1s and 4 were EF0. EF1 tornadoes have wind gusts of 86 to 110 miles per hour. It's based on the Enhanced Fujita Scale damage indicators. So a tornado is actually rated on the damage it does. And this could take some time. I know that the National Weather Service offices are still planning to look at more areas tomorrow, too. For Civic Media News, I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The new season of Emily in Paris is getting a star power injection. Minnie Driver has agreed to join the show for the upcoming season, its 5th. Driver's credits include Grosse Pointe Blank and Good Will Hunting, for which she was Oscar nominated. Driver joins Lily Collins, who plays the title character. Production is currently underway in Rome for the popular Netflix show. There is no release info yet on the dropping of season 5. Actress Scarlett Johansson is planning retaliation, and it has nothing to do with her Marvel character. Johansson was the victim of a joke on Saturday Night Live Weekend Update last year, thanks to her husband Colin Jost's co-anchor Michael Chi. Chi made a joke about Johansson's private parts, which shocked her as cameras caught her reaction backstage. Johansson told Vanity Fair that she was expecting a joke involving that region of the body, but was still blown away and said the joke was old school gross. Asleep with one eye open, Michael Chi. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy sky with scattered showers tonight and breezy with lows in the upper 40s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, still a little breezy, highs upper 50s to 60. Sun is back for Sunday, highs mid-60s. Rain chances return later Monday and especially into Tuesday. Currently at 75 degrees.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
The announcement by Republicans that they are removing 612 items from Governor Evers' proposed budget. Free school breakfast and lunches, extra money for PFAS monitoring. We've only scratched the surface of some 600 ideas investing in education, protecting consumers, and every one of those things is going to be taken out this week when Republicans meet to form their own budget.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome artist and photographer Nate Vomhoff. And it's a bar band Friday night, ladies and gentlemen, so our pal Terry Barr comes by with most excellent tunes. Let's Friday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Run to keep from hiding, except it's Friday and I'm here with all of you. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a fine guest co-host with me. His name's Jim Santel. He hosts the wonkiest of the wonky.
It is.
Radio shows, which I adore, Jim. You are with me when I'm doing my Saturday morning cleanings. You can find Jim's fine program, Amicus, a legal brief from 9 to 11 a.m. every Saturday morning. Jim, I wanted to talk with you about the arguments before the Supreme Court yesterday. To reset the stage, I did touch on it yesterday. We played some of the sound because, of course, I sat there riveted, glued to my chair.
All 2.5 hours, Maggie. You were there for 2.5 hours, right?
Taking notes and pelting my poor producers with texts of the sound that I wanted from the argument. So just to set the stage for everyone, again, Donald Trump has had this, what I'm going to call immigration unconstitutional plan. That
fixation,
has
Yes,
multiple elements. Almost all of them have been found by virtually all courts to be unconstitutional. The most notable of which was the executive order he signed on the day he was sworn in, doing away with birthright citizenship. Birthright citizenship means if you are born on American soil, even if your mother or father were here illegally, you are considered an American citizen. Again, every single court that has heard this, every single federal district court that has heard that question has concluded that his executive order is unconstitutional. The Trump administration has been appealing that. In a number of those cases, I believe at least three various federal district courts, when they heard that original question, the plaintiffs in those cases asked for immediate injunctive relief, which means, while we argue the merits of this case in a much longer form, will you, this court, please tell the Trump administration they can't enforce that executive order? And the courts, in response, said, yes, we will issue that injunction. And a number of district courts went so far as to issue the injunction on a nationwide basis. Instead of appealing on the merits and asking the Supreme Court, there are expedited ways to put merits issues before the Supreme Court of the United States on something as fundamental as the question of who is a citizen. Instead of asking the court to do that, the Trump administration asked the court to consider this seemingly technical question about whether or not district courts can indeed issue nationwide injunctions. Now, it gets a little weird here, Jim, because that is it is basically the issue that was being argued before the court. But as you know, Jim, as a fellow lawyer, when a party goes before a judge and says, will you issue a temporary injunction? you end up arguing about the underlying merits of the case. And it's only if you are likely to prevail on the merits of the case that a court will issue an injunction. Because if you were going to lose anyways, why would they give you this temporary relief? It mucks up the machinery. But again, here, the merits end up being argued a bit, as do the practical implications of the idea that, well, if a court can't enter those kinds of injunctions, and what I found most fascinating in the arguments was that the government's lawyer, Solicitor General Sauer, repeatedly basically said, well, we don't think we'll follow court orders, but not if we don't think they apply to a particular individual. So even if a court has entered an order in a particular district, for example, the Eastern District of Wisconsin, if we don't think for whatever factual reasons it doesn't apply to a particular person, we won't follow it as to that person, and we won't need to follow it outside that district anyways. Oh, and by the way, of course, we would oppose the certification of a nationwide class of plaintiffs on various grounds. At least he wouldn't concede that they wouldn't challenge that. So the practicalities of this boil down to this. If you're a person or the parent of someone who might be born, and don't even get me into the practicalities of how someone would go about doing that if they're pregnant, anyways, but setting aside that, it seemed that the government was arguing, and indeed he conceded when asked another hypothetical about gun rights by Justice Kagan, conceded, yeah, basically each person would need to bring a case as to themselves or their soon-to-be-born child to ensure their citizenship, which to me renders the Constitution a nullity, meaning it's meaningless. Am I missing something here, Jim?
Not at all. Not at all. So John Sauer, again, for what it's worth, the president's former lawyer. This is the same guy who about a year ago, Maggie, you and
former
I know this, you're the right
lawyer,
to exactly,
yeah.
And argued, apparently successfully, that presidents should have immunities, putting all that to one side. He comes forward and he says, yeah, you need to run into all your federal district courts around the country if you've got a situation. And of course, I think probably all the justices, even those who are going to go in the opposite direction, probably wondering. Appropriately, Ketanji Brown Jackson, she calls that a catch me if you can system. Don't you love that phrase? So in other words, you've got to go into the Eastern District of Wisconsin, District of Minnesota, Northern District of Texas, Southern District of California on every single one of
these
cases.
There's 92 district courts
exactly.
in the United States.
And presumably under Sauer's invocation of all this, maybe even multiple cases in each of those districts,
correct.
Right? To vindicate your own personal right. That is not our system of federalism. And again, it was good to hear a bit some of the justices pushing back on that and saying, I know, how do we get this? Gorsuch, among others, said, all right, how do we get this more quickly to us so we can avoid that disaster of having all of these cases percolating up, a word again used a lot yesterday, right? Percolate.
Barf.
It's all going to percolate up all over the place, right?
Got to percolate
and
the case.
And nothing good ever happens when things are percolating up from courts, right? And so you even got Gorsuch saying, how do we get this more immediately to us? He doesn't have an answer, of course, because he's just across the board. He's got a bright line test. These things are bad, can never do them. And thankfully, once again, you've got someone like Amy Coney Barrett, and yes, at the risk of sounding, right? She's saying,
who knew?
Right, exactly. Well, and it appears that she might have the answer to this, along with the Attorney General of New Jersey. There's got to be balance, right? It may not be that every case is subject to a national injunction here, but to your excellent point, the big stuff, right? How you interpret that first bit of language in the 14th Amendment, that should be universal, right? And can we
here's the thing. Like, the arguments kept coming back to, well, what is our rule of thumb for when nationwide injunctions are permissible? And they went through some different buckets and impractical and a little bit. But basically, it came down to, like, it's a really big deal.
Right.
And I thought that that's an okay rubric. They've used similarly vague definitions of, you know, the what do they call it when they got rid of Chevron and substituted
the
big question doctrine,
the major questions doctrine. It's big and it's new, and that's what John Roberts describes as the biggest new. You can't do it. Major questions doctrine. They've been that broad before. This can't be that difficult, right, Maggie?
No.
Come up with that rule. Admittedly, it's going to get different applications citizens around the country, but describe it. It can be done. I'm looking to Amy Coney Barrett, and yes, indeed, the other women on the Supreme Court to come up with the right answer here.
Right. Clearly, Justices Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sotomayor, I think Amy Coney Barrett.
Yes.
Is not going to take the bait. Justice Thomas, of course, said like three things. He's like, oh, when did these nationwide drunkards become a big deal? 19-6, we seemed to do okay without them before.
History, and like, that's the, right?
Which doesn't, is not actually accurate. Many scholars trace back these kinds of actions by courts over a couple of hundred years. It was all very painful to watch. I was encouraged by Gorsuch's questions. Mm-hmm. I was even at times encouraged by some of the questions from Brett Kavanaugh.
Yes.
Which it's interesting, again, to see this is the kind of case, and maybe it's only this kind of case, where you could get a Kavanaugh, maybe a Roberts, and Amy Coney Barrett to side with the other three liberal justices to say, you can't actually be operating in this level of unconstitutionalism and then say, everybody just hold your horses. We'll continue to violate people's constitutional rights while this percolates up through the courts.
Right.
Let's take a couple of calls because I think this is fascinating. And of course, that happened yesterday. And then we had the Supreme Court today blocking Donald Trump's continued use of the Alien Enemies Act to deport these Venezuelans. So I thought that was the timing here, the 1-2 step was kind of interesting.
And you almost wonder, again, they live in the real world. They're there from day to day. You almost wonder, Maggie, if they're getting a bit weary of this, right? Maybe they want to get back to interpreting the Clean Air Act and the Civil Rights Act and the things that they should do.
Like some really boring administrative law
the APA,
type questions.
Right?
Now that they've blown up the Chevron doctrine.
Right.
Let's wade into some other areas of expertise that they don't have. 855-752-4842-855-75-CIVIC. Mark from Prairie du Sac, say hello to Jim. What do you got for us?
Hey, Jim. Yeah, it just troubles me deeply that at one hand, they want to say that all these people that are here illegally are under the jurisdiction of the United States, so they're all criminals, but then they want to avoid due process, which is required, not even when you get to Fourth and Fifth Amendments. It is required, but under the Constitution itself, all crimes require a trial by jury. I mean, it is just can't be clearer than that. I mean, it just troubles me greatly that they're avoiding the whole thing, and then we have the Christy Noem saying, well, they're getting due process. Well, due process is supposed to actually mean something. It's supposed to have a concrete meaning, not some kind of ethereal thing that they've decided that their due process is slapping the handcuffs, somebody throw them, toss them in an airplane, and shipping them off to El Salvador.
And your point, Mark, it's inconsistency, right, Mark? That's the point you're making. It's due process when it's convenient, but many times, not so much.
None
we don't have to
all.
Do that, right?
Many times, none at all. Listen, right? Nobody from Mensa or the Article III courts is calling Christy Noem to help them understand these issues. Jacob, do we have time for the Noem cut where she says due process doesn't require a hearing? No, we do not. We'll take it on the flip side. Folks, if you want to join this discussion, 855-752-4842. I've got a fine guest co-host with me. His name is Jim Santel. Jim, I want to queue up and talk a little bit about Justice Souter.
Yes.
Because he passed last Thursday. Mm-hmm. And for those that aren't legal nerds, this was quite a moment. And I was hoping when we come back, if you could share some of your thoughts about who Justice Souter is, and maybe right now we've got a little bit of time.
Sure.
Cue up why Justice Souter is such a lightning rod.
Right. He is because he ignited, if you will, the phrase no more suitors. That's the conservative mantra that says let's be certain when we get somebody in the Supreme Court, they'll do exactly what we want. David Souter was not that person. That's the other great story of his life and the time on the bench.
We will talk briefly about Justice Souter when we return. Then I'm going to bring on one of my favorite Friday guests, Terry Barr, for a little bit of what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. All coming up next right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be right back.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The biggest thing that happens in Wisconsin state government every 2 years is the state budget. And last week at the state capitol, Republican lawmakers took a step forward in the process by voting out more than 600 measures from Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal. This has become a familiar step in this era of divided government. This is now the fourth budget proposal that Evers has put forward, and each one has been met with a similar fate. Even as this has become the custom, it doesn't have to be this way. Republicans could honestly engage with this budget and debate it on its merits. There are good, smart proposals here on everything from healthcare to education to childcare to environmental protection. And if there are items here they disagree on, make the case. Have the debate. But by voting everything out and starting from scratch, they are letting down the people of Wisconsin they are elected to represent by refusing to have this debate on a very basic level. We should expect better.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. After the election of liberal-leaning Justice Janet Prosewitz in 2023, Wisconsin State Assembly and Senate maps were challenged in the Wisconsin Supreme Court and subsequently thrown out as unconstitutional. But justices passed on a challenge to the congressional districts. With April's election of Liberal Justice Susan Crawford, pro-voter groups are trying again for a fairer congressional voting map. In early 2024, the legislature ignored six fairer maps and adopted Democratic Governor Tony Evers' least change compromise map, later allowed to stand by the U.S. Supreme Court. GOP candidates were elected to six of eight congressional districts with only 50% of the statewide vote in 2024. Two challenges were filed May 7th and 8th, one by the Elias Group, contending that the Least Change Directive had no basis in the Wisconsin Constitution, and the second by the Campaign Legal Center, argues that Evers' map ignored traditional redistricting norms, splits too many counties, and didn't equally apportion the districts. A record $100 million was spent by both sides in the recent Wisconsin Supreme Court race. The current margin in the U.S. House is 220 Republicans to 213 Democrats. We've linked to the filings and local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Matt and Air on Air.
Corrine Hendrickson, she owns a daycare center.
We're doing this day without childcare. What we do is we talk about what would happen, what would it look like if we didn't have childcare. But we also talk about what could it be? What can we do to change the system? I love all the protests. I love all the people speaking out against things. But we also need to participate in democracy by saying what we want and what we need and talk to our reps that way. So that's what this event is all about.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time. Weekday mornings, 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
It's Friday, everybody. We made it. Goodness. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got Jim Santel closing out the hour with me. Don't forget you can find him Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Wanted to give a little love to one of our callers, Joe from Madison. Say hi to Jim. What you got for us this
afternoon?
Hey,
Joe. How are you?
Hey, guys. Great show as always. I'm asking a question that's a little bit tangential, but I think it's part of this whole discussion, and it has to do with immigration and ICE raids. I'm thinking about the example that happened this week with the Justice Dugan out of Milwaukee, who, as I understand it, faces the felony charge of obstruction
for they claim that she was showing an immigrant in her courtroom how to leave, and this constitutes obstruction in what she was charged with, that felony. My question is this: the entertainer Kid Rock, who's a good pal of Donald Trump and has been photographed in his office and all, had there were ICE raids that were happening in Nashville where he has some restaurants, and apparently one of the sources said that his staff was told, anyone without legal status is asked to go home. And the reason being that they didn't want ICE raids in their restaurants. My question for you is that obstruction? You know that there's going to be ICE raids, so you close your restaurant and tell your undocumented people to go home because, I mean, you don't want to lose them as employees, or you don't want this up or happening or whatever. Isn't that obstruction? So
it depends on how far out the circle gets drawn, doesn't right. it, Joe? What I will say very clearly is that Kid Rock's restaurant in Nashville is not protected by the 10th Amendment. Lots of discussion to come on that. I am watching that case very closely. Please keep it locked right here, Joe. We will continue to bring you updates on Judge Dugan's case. In fact, we will have some of those updates right after the top of the hour. Jim, wanted to give you a shot. Please tell people why Justice Souter is such an important role model for attorneys, judges, and regular everyday people alike.
Here's a guy who is, again, nominated by George H.W. Bush. He's assumed to be a conservative justice, anticipating he's going to take the bench. We're going to overrule Roe versus Wade. And what does he do when he's on the bench? Maggie, you and I know this. Everybody else does, too. He is his own person. And by that, he means he applies the law to the facts. And he says, you know what? I'm not going to follow the agenda of any particular party. Ends up doing a number of things that, again, earn him this No More Souters title from the conservatives. In the Casey case, he sides with those who, including Sandra Day O'Connor, who support the right to an abortion, surprising people, and he articulates that in a way. He talks about stare decisis. This is the way the world has been. Let's not upset it. Bush versus Gore. He is horrified that the panel takes the case on, stops the voting in Florida because of the justice behind it. He is a man who stands, again, for the independence of the judiciary, and somebody who's bringing thoughtfulness to the work that he does. Fled Washington, D.C. at the young age of 69 to get out of there, went back to New Hampshire. He has this great commitment to civics and the importance of understanding how government works. He is an icon in American history, often overlooked.
Thanks so much. That's U.S. Attorney, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. We're now going to turn to one of my favorite guests every week, Terry Barr, for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Welcome, Terry. What you got for us this afternoon?
Ah, hello, Maggie. This will give you hope again. I recently talked with a gentleman who has a new book out, and the book is called Wisconsin Heroes, 100 People Who Changed the State, the World, and Me. I'm talking about author Dean Robbins. I had so much fun discussing this book with him. Amazing stories he found of all types of heroes in action, and almost all of them are either from Wisconsin or have a great story tied to Wisconsin that will certainly make you smile. So when I talked to him, I did ask him, you know, why did you write this book? What does this mean to you? He told me about this, including one of his favorite heroes. Let's take a listen.
People like Harry Houdini, and became fascinated with him. I had my sister tie up my wrists and my ankles with bandanas so that I could wriggle out of them the way Houdini had wriggled out of straitjackets.
You're brave.
Well, you know, it wasn't that hard. Probably harder for Houdini. It went on and on and on. I just fell in love with one heroic figure after another. Artists and activists and athletes and scientists. And I always had a strong interest in getting other people emotionally invested in them too. I just want my heroes to be your heroes. And to me, the best way to do that is through storytelling.
I'm so curious about your favorite. Do you have one, or can you even choose one, Dean?
I'm a huge music fan. I love Elvis Presley. And there's a little known Elvis story. It's really one of my favorites. This is 1977. He was booked to play at the Coliseum in Madison 2 months before his death. And he was just bottoming out with despair and depression. He was still wearing his sparkly blue jumpsuit from a concert that night in Des Moines. When he landed at the airport late at night in Madison, he was in a limousine going to his hotel for the concert the next day, and he was stopped at an intersection, and a young gas station attendant was being attacked by a gang of bullies. Maybe for the last time ever, something stirred in Elvis. And he said, "I can't let this happen." And he flung open the car door over his bodyguard's strenuous objections, and he strode off toward the attackers, throwing karate kicks and saying, "I'll take you on." He's wearing this sparkly blue jumpsuit, throwing karate kicks. I mean, it was a spectacle. And it was obviously Elvis Presley. Well, they ran. So Elvis had saved the day, the last miracle of his life.
Maggie, we need more Elvis these days.
We all need a little Elvis in a sparkly blue jumpsuit coming in to save the day. I'll take my heroes in whatever
to save America,
form they
right?
come. That's
yes.
right. Folks, that's Terry Barr, my good friend and colleague in broadcasting here at Civic Media. You can find her every Friday with you and me for a little bit of what's good, local, and overlooked. Thanks to Terry. Thanks to James. Thanks to all of you. I'll be back at the top of the hour with breaking news of the day. Keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The Supreme Court has upheld the temporary block of the Trump administration's appeal to resume deportations of Venezuelans under the use of the Alien Enemies Act.
The unsigned opinion again makes it clear the Supreme Court will not abide the administration sending any more alleged gang members out of the country without the opportunity to first pose a challenge. And in this 7-2 ruling, the justices say 24 hours notice is not enough, that detainees must be given sufficient time and information so they can contact a lawyer and seek relief in court. Exactly how much time will be for lower courts to figure out for now.
ABC Stephen Portnoy. A manhunt underway in New Orleans after a jailbreak. Authorities say 10 inmates escaped the Orleans Justice Center. One was captured earlier. All are considered armed and dangerous. The sheriff says someone from the inside may have helped them. Cassie Ventura concluded testimony today against her former boyfriend, Sean Diddy Combs, in the sex trafficking and racketeering trial after 4 days of testifying. This is ABC News.